I'm Joe Wood, and I believe.
Basel, Switzerland, 1566. Historian Samuel Cocytius publishes a pamphlet describing unusual sunrises and sunsets. A report mentions red and black balls in the sky, and Cocytius believes it to be some sort of religious event. But modern ufologists now interpret his sightings over four centuries ago to be a battle between various UFOs. Cocytius' pamphlet is only one of several similar documents published in the 15th and 16th centuries that wrote of miracles and sky spectacles.
Welcome to Alien Nation, the show about extraterrestrials and UFOs, asking the question, are we alone? In Alien Nation, I talk to other Earthlings about their otherworldly encounters, and we love hearing your stories, so please get in touch. I'll tell you how to do that at the end of the show. My guest today has been researching UFOs since 1975 and is the author of several books, including Tuned In, The Paranormal World of Music. Welcome to Alien Nation, Grant Cameron.
Hi, Joe. I can hear you really well.
Oh, beautiful. Good. Oh, good. How are you in Canada there?
Just fine. And yourself?
Yeah, good. Let's start this then.
Okay.
All right. So, it's your book, Tuned In.
Yes.
It's all about UFOs and musicians. But, you know, tell me, where did that all start? You know, where did you first start with your love of UFOs?
Well, the UFO thing came, like we were talking about, the Awakening Conference. This is what I believe it's all about, is about awakening people. Yeah. I was awoken in 1975 with two sightings within two nights. I, like you, probably didn't have any interest in UFOs. I was interested in situations around dying people, all the weird stuff that happens around people who die.
Yeah.
So I was fascinated with death and stuff like that. But I wasn't interested in UFOs. And what happened was there was a small town just north of the American border here in Canada where they were seeing stuff. And I said to my friend, instead of driving around the city, why don't we go out and see what everybody's looking at? And we didn't go. We didn't go for 3 months because we just sort of forgot about it. We didn't go. And then the UFO got caught on the ground. It's the only time I can recall in history that one actually got caught on the ground and was filmed by a TV studio jumping off the ground.
Oh, how amazing.
And then it was at that point I said to my friend, come on, let's go see what they're looking at. And I had no interest in UFOs. But that's where 35 years later, I suddenly realized, like, that's why this thing got caught on the ground. It needed me to come out there. Because I never would have gone if it hadn't been this TV video made. I wouldn't have gone out there. We'd forgotten about it.
Yeah.
So we went out. We drove around in the town, out of town, in the town. And then my friend said, okay, we'll drive into Carmen, which is this town. We'll drive in one more time. If we don't see anything, let's go home. I said, fantastic. This has been a total waste of time. We turn the car to go back in the town, and it appears from the left to the right. And it's the old idea, when you saw yours off the coast of Brazil, it's the old idea is, why do UFOs have lights on them? They have lights so you can see them.
Yeah.
If you don't see them, you're not going to know it's there. And they want you to see it. They're trying to deliver a message. They're trying to drag you into this situation to help awaken the world. So this thing came from the left to the right. It was different than yours. It was like almost like a heart. It was a plasma, red pulsing plasma object. Yours was moving very fast, which caught your attention. Mine was moving very, very slow and was bobbing up and down. Mm. And it was very right in front of the car, and it was down across. It was going right across the road in front of us. Mm. And so I was actually getting out of the car the car was still moving because it was going in behind these school buses that were parked outside this small town. And I wanted to see this thing because I knew it was going to go ahead behind the school buses. I wouldn't be able to see it anymore. And then two nights later, I drag all my friends out. And it's almost like your sighting where they get rid of Ronnie. They say, go back to the house. You need your glasses. And they want me by myself. So what happened the second time was I dragged all my friends out there. I said, you got to see this thing. This is amazing. Two nights later, they all come out. And they don't say anything for an hour, and they say, this is crazy. We're going home. We're going back to Winnipeg for pizza. And as soon as they left, it came the second night.
It
started. It was jumping around the sky. And there's one girl beside us in a car beside us was crying. She couldn't see it. And there was a guy with a camera, and he was just taking picture after picture after picture as this thing was coming towards us. It flew right at us the second night. And then it sort of made a turn, and it sort of flew off. And that's when I sort of, I fell off the edge of the earth. The rest of my friends, they just sort of, I took lots of people out to see this thing. And it was me that it sort of affected. And I figured, wow. And I saw it flying away, and I thought to myself, what's it doing? It didn't seem to be doing anything. It's almost like yours. It's off the coast of Brazil. And it's, what is it, fishing at the middle of the night? Or is it waiting for a sail at Harrods? Or like it's there. And 35 years later, I realized that I was part of something, that they wanted me to see this. And they wanted a message delivered. And I think after 44 years of researching, I think that's what it's about. They're trying to waken the world. That's what this is awakening thing is called. And I'm glad that you're now doing this thing with the musicians, because that's what I was trying to do. Is I figured I had come across this idea that musicians were involved. And the way I got that was, again, it was a very weird situation. Mm-hmm. I had a friend, he's an experiencer in the United States, and Warner Brothers is going to do a movie about him, about his very bizarre experiences. I was at his house in 2013. Warner Brothers, Mel Gibson was going to throw $80 million at this UFO story. He wanted to play the lead role. I heard that Julia Roberts wanted to be in this movie and stuff. I went to my friend's house. I was there, and this very bizarre incident occurred. And then a year later, so I'm believing anything this guy says, because I know this guy's the real deal. I saw so many weird things around this guy. I knew he was the real deal. Yeah. So a year later, he phones me up and he says, Grant, he said, I got a message from the Guardians. Now, the Guardians, have you seen, you remember the crop circle in England with the alien in the crop circle?
Yeah, definitely.
That's the Guardians. He painted it in 2009. He suddenly started painting. As soon as he had his experience, he got woken up at 46 years old with his very bizarre experience with five witnesses, 13 UFOs, aliens running all over the place. Just really, really bizarre. Very religious guy. Just sort of threw him off the edge of the earth like me. And so he phones me up and he said, I got a message from the Guardians. And the Guardians is that alien that's in that crop circle. And he drew it. When he drew it, it was exactly the same. It had the eye, the sort of the shadow under the eye. Everything is identical. So he said, I got a message from the Guardians. And I said, you got a message from me from the Guardians? He said, yeah. I said, so what's the message? He said, they want you to know that the message is in the music. And I went, well, Chris, you may be talking to the wrong guy, because I'm not interested in music. I don't play music. My mother was a church organist for 40 years. My sister's played in a band. My father built theater organs. But Chris, I don't listen to music. I'm not interested in music. And he just kept talking. He said, well, you know, the one song you should listen to is Kashmir by Led Zeppelin. And I went, okay, whatever, Chris, I'll listen to the song. And then this is how they hook you. This is how they drag you in. So then he said, and the other one I want you to, the one I think you'd listen to is a song, is a song called After the Gold Rush.
Neil Young.
By Neil Young. And I said, Neil Young? Are you kidding me? Neil Young is involved in this whole thing? And he said, yeah. And I said, Neil Young, I live in Winnipeg, Manitoba, Canada. Winnipeg is a town that even people in Canada don't want to visit.
I've been to Winnipeg, actually.
Yeah. So Neil Young grew up in Winnipeg. And if it had not been for the fact that Neil Young was one of the songs that he suggested, I never would have gone down that route. And the Neil Young, After the Gold Rush, if you look at the lyrics, I can read you a couple of the lyrics and you'll see that you tie into this as well.
Okay.
Neil Young says, and he got this from a script that somebody had written about this end of the world whole deal. So he says, look at Mother Nature on the run in the 1970s. Look at Mother Nature on the run in the 1970s. I was thinking about what a friend had said and hoping it was a lie. I was thinking about what a friend had said and hoping it was a lie. While I dreamed, I saw the silver spaceships flying in the yellow haze of the sun. There were children crying and colors flying all around the chosen ones.
Well, I dreamed I saw the silver spaceships flying in the yellow haze of the sun. There were children crying and colors flying all around the chosen ones.
And the chosen ones, I wrote an introductory for a book, about abductees. It's called, and they were called the Chosen Ones. The abductees are often called the Chosen Ones. Mm-hmm. There's children flying, colors flying all around the Chosen One, all in a dream, all in a dream. The loading had begun, flying Mother Nature's silver seeds to a new home in the sun, flying Mother Nature's silver seed to a new home in the sun. And it's this idea that if you take a look at the message, 39% of all people who are experiencers who claim that they've been on board the ship, if you see an experiencer, you say to them, have you seen the screen? Did they show you the screen? And they, if they've seen the screen, they know what the screen is.
What is the screen?
The 39% of all experiencers who say they've been on board the ship are shown the screen by the beings, whoever the beings are. And what they see is one of four different images. They see an image of a giant firestorm coming across the land, and it just sort of wipes everything out. Or a giant wave. A lot of people see the giant wave, this huge tsunami wave that just comes and sort of wipes everything out. Or they see the fish are dying. It starts with the screen, this beautiful scene of oceans and stuff, and then it just gets worse and worse, and the color of the ocean is changing, and the fish are dying, and the trees are dying, and they show this traumatic image to these people, and they sit there and they watch this whole thing, and it's this whole idea is you people are destroying the world.
Yeah, and, well, we are, aren't we? Look what we're doing.
Yeah. And so you get these things, and I sent you the notes about this thing about musicians. There's two bands where the bands were actually abducted, the entire band. One was a band in Canada. Very bizarre story that you should interview this guy. His name is Steve Boucher. The entire band was abducted, and then later on, they abduct the entire audience. It's just a bizarre story that
You're
he tells.
Kidding.
But the other one was the Moody Blues.
Yeah, now I've never heard of that, the Moody Blues were abducted.
Yeah, 67, coming from Manchester into London. They were 3 hours late. Mike Pinder tells a story about the fact that, you know, they saw this thing and what happened on the road and stuff like that. But both those people remember before they were born. And they remember that they were told, like Colin Andrews, who's the guy who did the crop circle thing. He's a good friend of mine. He started the crop circles in 83. And he had five bands come to him. And one was the Moody Blues. And they came to him and they said, we want to talk to you. And he said, okay, so they went for dinner, and the Moody Blues are talking about before they were born. And they said, we were told that we were going to be musicians. We were in this room with these sort of elder type people. And he said, it's going back and forth between Pinder and the lead guitarist. And they're telling this story. And they said, we knew we were going to be musicians. They told us we were going to be musicians. We're going to come in. We're going to put lyrics into the songs. And we're going to raise the consciousness of the earth. And Steve Boucher tells us the same story about being on there. And he said, you got to go down to this place. We need you down there. And he said, I'm not going. I've heard about this place. I'm not going there. And he has this sort of a battle with this sort of being about having to go to the earth. And this is the whole idea, is that you and I and everybody else, it's almost like they before you're born, if you believe in reincarnation, that this is a fact, before you're born, they say, okay, Joe, we got this problem. We need some volunteers. We got, you know, they're going to pollute the food. They're going to, you know, throw, plastics in the ocean.
Yeah.
And you and your son both say, we'll go, volunteer, we'll go. And they say, well, it's a tough job. And they say, no, you. And so that's the whole idea, is why are we here on Earth? And why are they coming? And you see this whole thing that they 39% are shown this thing about the fact that we're destroying the world.
Yeah.
54% of all experiencers who have been on the ship say they were talked to by the beings about oneness and love. That if you have the impression that you and I are separate, then I'm the good guy, you're the bad guy, and then I can kill you, I can steal your stuff or whatever. But if you believe everything is one, that we're all part of the same thing, and that love is the basis of the universe, then how can you steal? How can you kill? How can you start war and stuff like that? So 54% of all experiencers get this message about oneness and love. 26% of all experiencers are talked to about reincarnation, about the fact that this is part of the whole thing. So what they're doing, and that's what they're doing to you, is they drag you in, they drag me in, they drag a bunch of people who have volunteered to come in and do this sort of thing, and we are here to shift the consciousness.
Well, I know I'm here for a reason. I just know that I want to change the world, how it eats, have a healthy planet. I don't know how I'm going to do it, but I've thought about this for so many years. And I suppose the UFO thing, I'm just mad about that. I just know that I came from, or I don't know, I've got some connection there. Otherwise, I wouldn't be so mad about UFOs and
musicians, I think. Yeah, the musicians, I think, are important. And that's when Chris told me about Neil Young, and that dragged me in because I had no interest in music. And when I started to do the research, I suddenly realized there was this bizarre connection between rock musicians, and UFOs. And what I think it is that musicians are very right-brained. They're not logical, analytical. They just do whatever they want. They're very artistic. And most experiencers are right-brained, like musicians. And so if you and I have a sighting, you go to someone and say, oh, I had this sighting, whatever. They sort of make the sign of the cross and tell you to take two steps back and walk away.
Yeah.
But if you hear that Ronnie Wood or John Lennon or, some of these people, Elvis Presley had a UFO sighting, they go, what? They had it. What did they see?
Yeah.
It's more credible, isn't it? They have the ability to get the message. And the other thing I point out about musicians, if you were the aliens and you wanted to deliver a message to the earth, who would you put it through? When you have a kid, and you probably experienced this because you've got a couple of kids, you have your kid when he's between 1 and 10 years old, you're his hero. As soon as he's 10 years old, it's like, well, mom, could you work like 20 yards ahead of me or whatever? Yeah. When they're 16, they don't even want to admit that they have parents because they're building their ego and they're trying to develop their world. So when your kid is between 10 and 25 years old, who is their idol? It's the musicians.
Yeah.
So if you want to get these kids who are trying to say, what am I going to do in my life? Where am I going to go? If you want to influence them, you influence their idols.
Through music.
And are able to get this message across, whereas you and I can't. Like I've been doing the same thing as you, is interviewing musicians who have had this sort of thing, and you get these sort of signs that you're on the right track. Like when you came on my radar, I'll show you how bizarre it is. When you came on my radar, they told me that you had interviewed my friend Gary Heseltine. And I got this from a friend of mine, Pia Knudsen from Amsterdam, and or from Copenhagen. So she told me this, and I said, really? And then she said, oh, and it was Joe Wood did the interview, and she's used to be married to Ronnie Wood. And I said, really, really? And so I immediately went to your site, and I wasn't interested in Gary's interview. I wanted to see, did she interview any of the musicians? Because this is the whole deal, is that they're trying to get this message to the musicians. And I saw that you had done Robbie Williams.
Yeah.
But the first one did was
Sean Ryder.
So I listened to Sean Ryder's interview first. And in Sean Ryder's interview, you ask him, you say, so why do you think it was you? And he says, I think I was tuned in. And I went, tuned in? That's the name of my book. I said,
oh,
this
my
is pretty
God. Isn't that amazing? So
I contact Pia in Denmark, and I say, Pia, you can't believe this. I listened to the interview, and he said he was tuned in. That's the name of my book on music. And then she's running a conference at the time online, and there's the woman that's doing the presentation, Melinda Leslie from the United States, is showing slides. And as she's reading my email about the interview with Sean Ryder, Melinda Leslie shows a slide from the United States of a Ryder truck. And it's a big rider on the side. And that's when you get these synchronicities that indicate to you, yes, you've got to contact this woman. This means you've got to go. They give you these indirect signals that do it. And that's the whole deal. I think the next step is you're doing it on podcast. The next step, because you've got the ability to do it, is if you do this on TV, we always said, if you could get these major musicians on TV to talk about their experience, I think the world would absolutely be revolutionized because people will listen to these big superstars, whereas they won't listen to you and I, and they will start believing it. And the other thing that we wanted to do was, and this was actually going to happen a number of years ago, they were going to have a UFO Woodstock concert in the United States, and it was almost ready to happen. They were going to have it at Pepperdine University. They were going to bring in David Bowie and a bunch of the big people who were experiencers. And the guy died. They were doing the final parts where they were doing the security and stuff like that, and he died. That's the other thing we're trying to do is get some major concert where these major musicians who are experiencers actually come forward and people go like, wow. Because it's one thing for someone on the street, but it's another thing when you get a superstar who actually says, yeah, this is for real, and I saw one of these things. And then one, it's the idea of the circus. Once you get them caught in the circus where they're listening, then you deliver the message, but you can't deliver the message until you have somebody who has the power to get people's attention.
Yeah. I mean, I know that lots of older musicians have written songs like that, but I wonder about the newer musicians. I mean, you know, what's coming out now, I wonder if they have been influenced.
Yeah. Yeah, if you look at my book, I have a lot of the younger musicians, the rappers, Billy Ray Cyrus, who, you know, he's not that old. I mean, he had 5-6 UFOs. He took a picture of them and put it on Twitter. There's a lot of the young musicians who have the same sort of thing. And when you see the messages, it's the message about oneness, about love.
Yeah.
And you see this idea that I believe that they are using musicians to get us the message that we aren't alone, that we aren't the kings of the castle. There's other people out there and there's higher realms than us. And this whole idea that we're destroying the planet, that is the main one that the experiencers talk about, is the fact that we have to realize that we came here at a certain time and that we only have so much time to turn this thing around.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I mean, we have done so much damage. It's incredible. And of course, when you think about it, music is the way to get through to anybody. You know, that it's just, it is, isn't it?
Yeah, or you have the vibration, and you know, yeah. You got some major people like Cat Stevens, who you knew Cat Stevens. Yeah. I mean, here's a guy who was an experiencer. Most people don't know that he was on board the ship, and he talks about this consciousness thing, which is a big element as well. He said he wrote a song called Freezing Steel, and a lot of you don't pick it up till later. This song about freezing steel. I was on the ship of freezing steel, the ship without the guiding wheel, and we now know that's how they fly the ship. That people have been allowed, 14% of all experiencers have been allowed to fly the flying saucer. And they'll all say the same thing. You use your mind. It's all, the craft is alive. You become one with the craft and you fly the craft, and whatever you think is what the craft does. And Cat Stevens had this back in the 1970s. He was talking about it in his song. And you get Sammy Hagar and Ace Frehley from Kiss and these major people that people don't realize, these guys will openly talk about the fact that they were on board the ship, they have been abducted, and that they're part of this whole thing. And it's a very powerful way for them to get it across, but it's just starting. So I'm glad you've joined the crowd in getting this story out. And I hope you can get these major musicians on and talk to them. Even people like the guy who wrote the Awakening Conference, or started the Awakening Conference, has only run for 3 years, and you see it's a major conference.
Yes,
if you ever interview this Michael guy, and he's not really talked about it publicly, but you ask him, how did you start that conference? Where did you get the idea? He had no UFO background. He's got a really bizarre story of how he started that conference. I mean, he was contacted and told to start that thing, and it was an instant success. So we're making some headway.
Yeah.
It's whether we're going to have enough time to pull it off before we sort of, you know, flush ourselves down the toilet.
Yeah, exactly. Well, things like podcasts make it easier to get across to people. And, you know, and people seem to be really loving this. I think a few years ago, we wouldn't be able to do this. But people seem to be much more open-minded to it now. It's all sort of coming out. And I think that's what they want. Now our planet is a real, you know, it's not a coincidence that our planet's in a terrible state, and we're getting more and more sightings, and people are becoming more and more open-minded. So, you know, we're doing something right.
Yeah, it's changed since 75 when I had my sighting, even since yours in the late 90s.
Yeah.
You can see that it's changed dramatically. And it's stories like this, you know, where you get people who talk about the fact that, and musicians, the other thing musicians have, which is kind of weird, is you had Sean Ryder talk about seeing over 100 UFOs at one time. And musicians see an awful lot of UFOs. Barry Gibb, when he won the Grammy for Saturday Night Fever for the music, he walked out and saw 10 UFOs. Patrick Mraz, who took over for Yes, the band for when you at Yes, saw a freeway of UFOs in Brazil. This is like thousands of UFOs, all in red UFOs in this line going through the sky. And you see these kind of things where these musicians, once the stories get out, then people realize, like, wow, I mean, if these people see it, then there must be something to it. And I think that's how they're basically changing the consciousness, where now you can talk about it and it's more open. And I think we've made great headway. In 1970s, people thought UFOs were random. When I had my first sighting And you, people would think, okay, it's a random event. The UFO just happened to be there. You happened to be there. And we now know it's not a random event. If you, because in '70s, if you saw two UFOs, it'd lock you up. I mean, you're totally crazy if you say you saw two UFOs. Now we know that people, when they have sightings, they're usually a lifer. They'll see sightings, you know, people see sightings all the time. That people are chosen. It's not a random event. If you see a UFO, it has lights on it so you can see it. And it's wanting to get your attention because it wants you to do something.
Yeah, definitely. And it wants to open people's mind about the possibility of... Because, you know, there's lots of people I've talked to with small minds, I must say, no, there may be other sort of forms of life, but they don't believe that there could... I say, oh, come on, the universe is so big. And lots of people turn around to me and say, when I saw my UFOs, was I on drugs? And that's something that people think about musicians. Just because they're talking, seeing UFOs, they think they're on drugs. But that's quite sad, actually.
Yeah, well, I think that's the that's the right brain, left brain. The right brain people are like musicians, artists, experiencers. And the left brain people are the people who think they're rational, analytical. And that's the left brain that I was always trying to say, nah, this isn't for real. Nah, it's just random. Nah, it's this. Yeah. And it's the sort of the skeptical left brain that's talking. But, you know, it's like they say, ufology and science advances one funeral at a time, that those people gradually die off. And you take the young kids of today, I mean, you say, is there life out there? Well, of course there's life out there. I mean, and that's the thing, is it's changing slowly, but eventually we will know. And then once everybody knows that they're here, then comes to the more important question is, why are they here? And that's when I talked to Chris Bledsoe, who had this very dramatic experience that Warner Brothers was going to do, and there's still going to do something. He was actually pulled by a sort of an angelic being after the guardians, and because he wasn't talking about it, he stopped talking about it. He said nope. He was in a real religious place in the United States, and he just got hammered once he brought out the fact that he'd seen something, and so he said, oh, that's it, I'm not going to talk about it. And then she pulled him in 2012, the same day that I had a bizarre experience, and this angelic being takes him, and she says, Chris, you have a burden, and it is yours to carry. And I said, a burden? Do you know what the burden is, Chris? He said, yeah, I know what the burden is. It's the message. I was told, you have to talk about this. You cannot keep quiet. It is your job to get this out, to talk about it. And now you can't shut the guy up. I mean, he's just like, and that's the thing, is once you get convinced and you start putting it out, eventually the message will be that UFOs are real. There's some sort of intelligence beyond us. Yeah. And then it comes down to, well, why are they here? And they're not here to eat us. They're not here to steal our gold. They're not here to shop. They're not here to fish. They're here to deliver a message. That's why they're here.
And the message is, you got to look after this planet and turn it around. That's what I believe.
Yeah. You got to realize that you are part, this oneness message, 54%, the oneness, that you are part of the Gaia. You are not separate. The way we say it is, well, animals are just objects, things, you know, fish are just objects. You know, everything around us is just an object and we can use it up. And no, you are connected to everything. It is one. You are one with the universe, with the planet. And when you destroy that, you destroy yourself. You have to be part. You have to work in cooperation with the entire universe and with the Gaia. Otherwise, it's game over.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with you 100%, Grant.
One story I sort of want to tell you, because there's one that ties into the Rolling Stones, which is kind of a nice way to end. There was a story. Yeah. There's a Neil Young sang this song after the Gold Rush. And a bunch of experiencers, I don't think they even know, there was a bunch of experiencers who sang this song. And one of them was Nina from Germany. And what happened was, it happened with the Rolling Stones. Rolling Stones, and you may have been there, this was in Berlin in April of 1982. Yeah. They played in a concert in Berlin. And at the end of the concert, the Rolling Stones let up a pile of balloons. And they
float
up. Okay, and they float up and out of the stadium, and one of the people there was a guy named Carlo, and that was Nina's guitarist, and he was watching this event. And as the balloons sort of floated up and floated away, he looked at them, and as they were going towards the horizon, he said they started to change sort of like shape, and he thought they look more like UFOs than they do of balloons. And so he wrote this song called 99 Balloons. And I don't know if you know this song. He wrote this song called it was on the number one in the UK for 3 weeks. He writes this song.
Yeah.
And basically it was, The idea was that in Germany they take 99 red balloons and they release these balloons into the air and they float towards the wall, and that's this idea of separation. We're all one, but we believe we're separate, so we build this wall, and the balloons float over the wall into East Germany, and the East Germans pick them up on radar and they think they're UFOs, so they scramble the jets and they go chasing up, and they suddenly realize, oh, they're just red balloons. And then they want to show this force. They don't want to look like they're stupid. So they have this show of force, and they shoot all these red balloons down. Yeah. And then the West Germans are figuring, oh, something's happening. And they start this 99-year war that kills everybody on the earth. And the song ends by this woman, Nina, walking through the rubble of the destruction of the earth after this 99-year war. And she finds one of the red balloons. And she holds it up and says, this is for you, and lets the red balloon go. And I think that's what we have to do, is we put these balloons up and we hope for the best, and that we try to go into this idea of oneness, that we are all one, we are together, and we have to realize that, otherwise it's game over.
Yeah, absolutely. Gosh, I remember that song, 99 Red Balloons. Isn't it going something like that?
99 Kriegsminister streichelt und Benzinkanister.
And that's where it came from. It came from the Rolling Stones writing balloons.
That's
so
cool.
You never know what you do and how it will react, how people will react, and how this message gets across. Because when you released the balloons, you didn't realize this would happen. This is where the song would come from. And it's this same idea that we could destroy the world, and we have to realize we're all one, and let's get along, and let's treat everything in the world as if it's sacred, and everything will be okay.
Yep. I think that's wonderful. Yeah, we are trying our hardest, and I'm sure with people like you, Grant, and all the UFO enthusiasts, I think we'll be able to spread the word.
Yeah, and I appreciate what you're doing, because you're doing great work, and I believe you came here for a reason. And all we can do is, as I always tell people, if you believe reincarnation is a fact, you only have one thing to worry about. You came into the world to do something, because you would have planned, okay, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that, or whatever. And when you leave the world, all they're going to do is ask you one question. They're going to say, Joe, how did it work out? You can't bring up Hillary Clinton, your mother-in-law, the dog ate my homework, it rained in Britain all the time, and it couldn't do anything. You're just going to be able to reply for yourself, what did I do? So all you have to do is worry about, we came into the world to do something. We are going to be asked how it worked out when we left. All we got to do is worry about, what are we here to do? And are we doing it? That's all we have to worry about. We don't have to worry about what everybody else is doing.
Yeah.
Just what am I here to do, and am I doing it?
Yeah, I'm here to save the planet and to awaken everybody. That's what I'm here to do.
Beautiful. And anything I can do to help you, I'll do it. I'll even give you some interesting interviews, I think, people that you should be talking to. And,
oh, yes, please. That would be great.
There's lots of musicians. There's a friend of mine who's doing an actual Broadway musical on UFOs, artist in the New York City area, New Jersey. So,
really? I'd love to go and see that.
Yeah. So I'll send you some of these contacts that I think you should, and you can decide whether you want to interview these people. But I've been in it for so long. I know everybody, and I know a lot of interesting musicians that you should talk to, especially this guy that the entire band is abducted. He'll tell you the story how he abducted the audience, and fascinating stories. Or you may even be able to get Pinder from the Moody Blues to tell you his story about coming into London. And when people hear those stories, they go, wow, I can't believe these guys. If these guys are involved, then it's got to be for real.
Yeah, definitely. I'm going to try and get hold of him. Definitely. Now tell me, how can we get a copy of your Tuned In? Where can people buy it, when the people that are listening to this?
Okay, basically on Amazon, I guess, would be the place to go.
On Amazon. Okay, that's great.
And most of the stuff that I do a lot of new stuff. I do it on my White House UFO YouTube channel. So I do a lot of presentations and stuff like that, and put it up there, all the new stuff that I get. And that's where people should sort of follow me, because that's where I do my stuff. White House UFO YouTube channel.
Okay, I'm definitely going to tune into that.
Beautiful. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Grant.
Have a good day, and release a red balloon for me.
I definitely will. Thank you so much, Grant, for talking tonight. It was so interesting.
Thanks for your interest.
That's our show for today. I really hope you enjoyed it. If you did, please rate us on whatever platform you get your podcast from. It helps people like you find us. Today's show was produced by Mike Hansen for Pod People Productions. Associate producer Colette Cooper, and recorded at Hackenbacher Studios by Oliver Briley. Theme music by Mike Hansen and Jamie Allen. Special thanks to Nigel Heath and our narrator, Mike Hansen Sr. If you want to share your stories, we'd love to hear from you. Just email info@poppeopleproductions.co.uk, subject matter Alien Nation. Beam me up next time. I'm Joe Wood. And I believe.